Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, Jeff Baker, Christopher Graybill, Kate Torrey, Christopher Walker, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands 70, Vengeance Trail. Somewhere at the bottom of a deep well of darkness and misery, Ryan stirred. It felt like the skin of his chest was a big bag wrapped around 40 pounds of busted glass. With every laboring breath he drew, it felt as if a thousand jagged points stabbed and rasped at his raw nerve endings. Worse, as he became aware again, was that he could hear his breathing. Not just the ragged in and out of exhalation that was always with you, whether you paid it mind or not, but a nasty, wet slurping noise combined with a hiss, and it was hard to breathe. Bastard hard. Sucking chest wound, he realized. So called, one of his father's healers had told him back home in Front Royal long ago, because it really sucked if you got one. And unless you got pretty quick attention, so did your chances of living.
Christy.
The name went off in his mind like 10 pounds of smokeless powder off a blasting cap. She and the companions hadn't come to his aid, which meant they weren't able to. For a moment, in the damp, dark misery of his mind and body, he fought the clammy jaws of panic. He was hurt bad and alone. He tried one of the deep breathing exercises Christy had taught him to calm himself and banish the terror that threatened to rob him of the last remnants of his manhood and whatever he might laughingly call hope. He sucked the air way down with his abdominal muscles. It worked, too. It felt as if some giant, muty bastard had plunged a 20-inch saw into his flat belly and was sawing for all he was worth. Whatever else you could say about it, it took his mind off feeling sorry for himself. His eye opened. It was resisted by some kind of thick gumminess, but the jolt of white-hot agony that racked his being as he breathed in did the trick. The first thing he saw was lots of nothing much. Blue dimness as far as his eye could see. After a moment, he noticed it deepened in the direction the not-so-gentle pull of gravity was telling him was downward, and it was banded in various shades and hues and molded into cone and curtain shapes. He was lying on the very lip of the big ditch itself, with his outflung right hand, fingers tingling as though with crawling fire as circulation restored by some unnoticed movement returned feeling to them, hanging over a mile of space.
Oh, fuck.
He rolled his eye down. The right side of his face was pressed to a rough rock surface. The tarry-looking pool spread around it tended to confirm his suspicion that what had glued his eyelid shut was his own blood, spilled in a copious quantity. He rolled the eye up. A granite outcrop, almost black in the dusk, hunched over him like a leering gargoyle. He could only guess that after being shot, a remembered flash of pain in his chest, of spinning dizzily into blackness, vaster by far than the Grand Canyon, he had tumbled down the steep but not sheer slope and bounced over that last humpback boulder to come flopping to a stop on a hard ledge of rock. It had busted hell out of him. But it was nothing compared to what would have happened had he actually gone over. None of it was going to matter a bent, spent shell case if he couldn't do something for himself, and fast. He'd suffocate if the wound wasn't tended to. He knew what had to be done. Apply what Mildred called an occlusive dressing, a sort of valve that would flap shut and seal the hole when he inhaled, but relax and expel air when he breathed out. It wasn't all that complex an operation, and anything reasonably airtight would do for a patch. Nuke it. He even had the proper material for the job tucked away in one of his pockets.
What?
He wasn't alone. Having another living being find you helpless in the Deathlands was an almost automatic death sentence. Even if that being walked on two legs like a human being. Maybe worse if it was a human being. Ryan took stock of his resources. He still had all the weapons he could want. He could feel the familiar weight of the Steyr lying across his left leg, the big broad-bladed Panga in its sheath on his hip. Even his Sig Sauer, with the built-in suppressor, He reckoned that was the hard object, prodding a busted-end rib around in him every time he fought down a breath. He had feeling back in his right hand, even if it was feeling like it was being held in a fire, and could move his fingers. But his left hand wasn't responding. A note of unusually savage ache in the giant throb of pain that was his being suggested he might have a busted clavicle on that side, which meant he could count that arm completely out. No force of his will would get the limb to so much as move. It just mechanically couldn't happen, any more than the toughest man could walk with a broken pelvis. He looked around, hoping his stalker would miss the motion of his eyeball in the gloom. Stalkers. That was the first thing he saw. Shapes, strangely hunched, gathered around him. He could make out no detail in the gloom. They were small, no more than 3 feet high, max. Not that it mattered. A three-legged coyote pup could put him on the last train west in his current condition. A shape loomed over him. He could make out the glint of moisture on big, staring, nightmare eyes, big teeth gleaming pale behind animal lips. He tried to roll away. His body refused to obey. He tried to bring his right arm up to ward off the monster. It didn't work. All he could do was turn his head frantically from side to side on his neck. A small paw stretched out over him, and blackness took him.
Robbed. Cheated.
Red Wolf paused dramatically, his painted axe blade face glaring out from below the wolf's head he wore like a cap, with the rest of the pelt hanging down his broad bronze back. He was a one-time war leader of the Cheyenne from the Medicine Bow country, or so he said. The multi-megaton pasting that had taken out the Warren Missile Complex had left that very part of southern Wyoming and northern Colorado a howling wasteland as virulent as anything the Midwest boasted. Red Wolf had proved time and again that his heart was as cold as the coldest, his case as hard as the hardest, and justified his role, not just as a member of Chato's outlaw horde, but one of its leaders. If he wanted to dress in dead animal parts and various colors of paint, nobody was going to challenge him. Who wasn't ready to chill or be chilled on the spot, anyway? Chato himself was an Indian, though much smaller and with quieter tastes. The problem with Red Wolf wasn't what he claimed to be. The problem was that he was a bone outlaw, a seething vessel of barely repressed murder at the best of times, and he was taking the loss of the travelers even harder than the rest of what passed for Chato's command council. The other eight stared at him from the circle, where they squatted in the flickering feeble light from a fire of dried brush scraped together in the center of the cave. They looked lean, predatory, and expectant. They also looked as if they were trying desperately not to bust down and cough their lights out. The cave etched into the sandstone bluff by wind and water, and maybe, just maybe, improved by the hands of similar bands of desperados of ages past, was cool even in the heat of summer, which this wasn't. But there was no smoke hole, much less a chimney. Consequently, a fog bank of nasty sage-colored smoke that went up the nostrils and down the throat like prickle burrs hung from a height of 2 feet off the floor to somewhere near the irregular arch of ceiling above.
Not much we can do about it, Pinche.
El Gancho, a bandit from northern Mex, was a squat, leering man with a bad eye and a worse mustache.
All our days of scouting and waiting gone for nothing.
The tall Indian Chato felt what had seemed like a fluttering of butterflies in his belly turn into a minor trembler.
Easy now, friend.
Ironhead Johnson was a woods-running coldheart, originally from up on the Muscle Shell, and more recently from Taos and part south, who had headed west and hooked up with Chato's growing band when the upper Grande Valley got too hot for him. He had been shot in the head on at least 4 occasions, with no more effect than minor deteriorations of personality and impulse control, neither of which had been notable before. One bullet scar was a white pucker over the inside end of his right eyebrow, like an off-center third eye.
Spilled blood can't go back in the body.